of Writing at The Ohio State University. This is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. J. Randall Hicks is the Multimedia Marketing and Promotions Coordinator of The Ohio State University's new Ohio Union, which is home of the Don't Stop Believing Ohio Union Flash Mob video that's had over 1.5 million hits on YouTube. Along with Brittany Belland and Abby Ellender and five other OSU students, he co-wrote the short film Disconnected for the 48-hour Columbus Film Project. Welcome, Brittany, Abby, and Jay Randall to Writer's Talk.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Well, let's dive in and talk about your film, Disconnected. Connect with it. We have to describe the process for the 48-hour film project first, and that can be viewed, the process and more information about it can be viewed on the web at www.48hourfilm.com. But what happens is participants randomly draw a genre and have to include specific pieces of dialogue and character names and things like that. From that, you write, shoot, produce a film in 48 hours, starting on Friday night, ending on Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obliterating any weekend plans
yeah.
you might have.
Absolutely.
Good. And I think we have some footage of Jay Randall calmly preparing to receive your film, randomly receive your film genre, and we can go to that.
Very nervous, very excited, looking forward to finding out what genre we get. All kinds of ideas are swimming around here, but we won't know until we draw. But right now, just a lot of excitement.
Tell me about your genre. Tell me about what you picked after that.
The genre that I drew out of the hat was called film de femme.
Okay, and explain.
A film de femme is a genre that was created to offer more leading roles for women. So technically, you could do any genre. You could do horror or fantasy or romance or drama, but it had to have a strong female character in the leading role. And the examples they gave were like Ellen Page in Juno or Erin Brockovich or Monster with Charlize Theron, all of which were very different genres but had that strong female role.
Okay. So how did that influence your writing as you were getting into it? What did that do for you as writers and knowing that you had to have a strong female lead?
For me, at first, it kind of put almost a writer's block on me because I knew that I had to do something that was similar to those movies but not exactly the same. So I remember my first pitch was just like a girl working in an office and she works her way up, which was something that was just very, you know.
Working girl.
It was original. Exactly. That's exactly what I said. It was not original at all. And so that's how I felt like it. I really needed a discussion about it before I was able to really come up with anything creative.
Okay. How did that work for you?
I mean, I definitely think that something we struggled with was making sure that we had a feminist perspective on it, too. That came up several times, that we wanted to have the strong female lead, but we didn't want her to be, like, a conflicted character because we wanted to make sure we were staying true to, like, you know, our roots as women anyways.
Yeah.
So that was something that we talked about several times and we wanted to incorporate into the script.
So you're never conflicted?
Never
is
conflicted.
That, okay, good. That's true to your roots. You're never conflicted. That works well. Other elements of the film that you had to include were you had the character of Sam or Sarah Carpenter, who had to be a ticket seller.
Mm-hmm.
So that's constraining, right? How many places can you go for tickets? You had to have a cell phone as a prop, which was probably very difficult for your generation to come up with a cell phone.
So hard.
As a prop.
Search for hours to get one.
And you had a line of dialogue. All you need is one of these. So tell me about working with some really specific pieces of information that you had to work into the script. What was easy? I mean, it seems like the cell phone, not hard. If it had been a rutabaga, maybe more difficult. How did that work for you?
That's interesting you said that because the year prior to this year's 48-hour film project, the prop was actually a head of lettuce. So that was a much more difficult prop to use. But cell phone was quite easy. What we kind of did was took that idea and kind of made it the whole focus of the film that we created, that the cell phone would be seen in practically every scene that we shot.
Yeah, we felt like it'd be really simple for a cast just to use a cell phone, just like, hey, Mom, I'm back from school, and then that would be the end, and they would have gotten that out of the way, and they wouldn't have to do anything else with it. So we decided we would actually focus our film about social networking, technology, how it's kind of like taking over our generation, and actually focus the film on the cell phone.
Okay. Did you notice in other films what you're describing as we're just going to use it as a prop and get it out of the way? Did you get to mock them for that then later on?
Yeah.
There was you weren't true to the prop?
It was kind of balanced. There were some films that was just ran random prop in other films kind of made it the whole focus of the film. So we were kind of in the middle of the pack on that.
So what's your major?
My major is logistics management, so I'm in Fisher College of Business.
Okay. And that helped you in this film because then you could tell Jay Randall what to buy, what not to buy.
Yeah, I was actually helping to oversee like our whole schedule of events, and we had a very detailed schedule that Jay Randall laid out for us that we needed to be done shooting at a specific time and start editing at a specific time and things like that. And we learned in the end that that needed to be adjusted for next time. But my job was basically to keep us on track and then in the writing session, make sure that we could kind of take those creative ideas and make them like feasible ideas. Okay. So I was kind of there to like make sure the process was rolling.
Okay. And those creative ideas, making them feasible, you had to be cruel with the budget and say, we can't have a whale.
Exactly.
Flown in.
Exactly. We actually talked about doing a hospital scene, which would have been great, except for we would have had to create the whole hospital room and all of those things. And so it ended up turning into a car crash scene, which worked
because
out very well.
Because car crashes are cheaper than...
Well,
that's funny. I mean, things like that would come up in the process. And I kept the writer's room kind of limited to people because I knew people would be looking at it from an eye of saying, oh, we can't do that or that would be too hard. I didn't want that to limit the writing process. I wanted the story to be whatever it was going to be, and then we would figure that out later. Mm-hmm. But with regards to the hospital, that was seeming to become quite a, you know, a difficult shot to even try to conceive. So
it would have needed a lot of extras to the way that I wanted it to be done. And
I mean, I didn't want to stifle the creativity, and nobody did, but it came down to the point where we needed to make decisions, and a hospital scene just wasn't the way it was going to go. So.
Now, that sounds like in a big budget, that's going to be the producer's role, right? To say, you can't have this, you can't have that. Then what was your role? You were the director, your videographer. How did that work out? Since you were in charge of Ohio Union Television that this arises from because it's an OSU group, a student group, right?
It is. Okay. This was a team of students that I put together that are from many different student organizations and work environment, just people that I've had the pleasure to come to know throughout time. I guess my initial role was as producer. I got screen credit as director, although I would give Brittany as much credit as director as I would take in that. Because she didn't really need a whole lot of directing as far as acting goes. I would just kind of say, this is the scene, and then she would make those choices from the actor's point of view. So my role was basically the bottom line guy. If it was a choice between this and this, I would make the final decision. Where I become really get to be a little bit more creative is in the editing, but I had a very effective, good editor. So it became more of tweaking on my end, saying, let's just shorten this scene a little bit. Let's extend that a little bit longer. I want to catch that line. Can we just put that back in? That was kind of my role, but this was all entirely done mostly by students. Mine was just kind of a supervisor.
Although there is one point, I should point out, a Hitchcock-esque point in which you make an appearance and you have to sort of watch for it, much like, you know, Hitchcock rushing for the bus. I think it's in The Birds or something like that. You pick out Hitchcock and you get to appear as sort of the voice of authority, or I don't know how you would characterize that. But was that your choice, or did the students say, did your fellow writers say, no, you should be this voice of authority because you're older? And
yeah, exactly. I just kind of fit the role. I was, I was the old guy in the room, and if there's going to be a professor scene, then I was the logical choice to play the professor, which is fine. But I think my Hitchcockian moment came in the scene after that when I'm sitting under a tree texting, pretending to be a college student, and you may not get that was me as well.
So. Pretending to be a college student. Okay. Now, so what's your major?
I'm actually psychology. Mm-hmm. I started off as theater, and then I went over to psychology because I just took a class, and I just realized it was really interesting, and I thought, like, why not just study it for fun, and maybe it'll come up something someday. I still have a theater minor, so I'm still interested in it, definitely. And I want to move to L.A. and hopefully, you know, attempt to be an actress when I graduate. I'm very passionate about it.
Okay. And that allows you to figure out the psychological background of your character.
Yes.
Because you're the star of this.
Yeah, it's actually really helpful. I mean, a lot of things that you learn about the human brain and our emotions and even just like our sexuality, like you wouldn't realize that you need it to play a character. And it also helps me work with other actors and work with other characters and be able to understand exactly why they're making the choice that they're making. It's, I don't know, it's a very good basis for being an actress.
Did you bring that up in the writing and say, I want her to have a conflict?
No. The only time it might have come up is when we talked about how we wanted to keep the movie, you know, more feminist and not, I mean, maybe that's the only time it ever came up. But
okay. So have you had coursework that you thought was helpful in the writing of this? Have you taken any screenwriting courses at OSU or writing courses that particularly influenced you?
I have not taken any writing or screenwriting courses, but my logistics background definitely helped in my role in this film, which was kind of like overseeing, being a little bit of the like producer background, just keeping us on schedule and on track, and then like really forming a solid idea in the writing room. So my background in business and making, you know, writing business plans and putting together projects and all that kind of stuff really helped me in a different way than like Brittany's background as an actress has.
Okay. Well, lead me through your process for writing the film. I was there for just a little bit of it, and I've got some footage from some of your original writing sessions. So what did you do? You started off and said, here's a pitch session. How many, and each person had to come up with an idea, and then you worked with it. How did that work out?
Well, first I wanted to talk about the room itself. I thought it was important that we created an environment that would be conducive for a group of people to write. So, you know, I booked this specific room. We got the post-it pads and put the things up on the wall to keep us all mindful of, you know, stories have these elements that we need to keep in mind when we write. I put dictionaries and thesauruses and even a rhyming dictionary because we didn't know if we were going to get a musical as a genre. So tools and things, lots of food and snacks for everybody to have, just so that we could all be in an environment that we could feel free to be creative and share. But yes, when we got down to the process, it was, we kind of went clockwise around the table and everybody pitched an idea based on the genre. Abby helped us list these things out on the dry erase board. We kind of narrowed that down to a smaller chunk. We did another round robin around the table. We got it down to two, and then we just simply took a vote whether we were going to go this way with something that was lighter or this way, which was what we ended up doing, something a bit heavier. So
yeah, we had like 5 minutes to just brainstorm on our own to like come up with our own pitch, and then after that 5 minutes we went around and we discussed all of our pitches, and that's when we put up on the board. And then I think we had about 45 minutes or so of us just talking about those pitches, and we just started crossing off the ones we didn't care about too much, and then like the pitches just sort of started like going together, becoming one. And all of a sudden, Jordan Davis, which was another writer, she came up with this like social network sort of taking over our lives, technology kind of, just sort of like an idea. And then from that, we took like another 7 minutes where we all wrote pitches off of that idea. And that's where we came up with two that we felt really solid about. And then we took the vote.
Yeah. So it sounds like a sort of a sci-fi take as well, of technology taking over. And it always is interesting to me that it's a negative sci-fi take.
Yeah.
You know, it's always, oh, the evil technology. Did you talk about that aspect of it or as a sort of a negative thing? Because I remember the part that I had sort of witnessed, you were talking about trying to keep it positive in terms of the role model. That you didn't want, for example, the main character who was female to be a slasher or, you know, a murderer, because you wanted to be positive. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about that. Was that ever an area of discussion, or just always, sci-fi is always negative?
We just kind of, everybody agreed. We were all on our laptops, first of all, typing up. And Jordan was using a Google document to talk to the people in the other room to keep them updated. I mean, like, we all had our cell phones going off every 2 minutes. Like, it was just so obvious, like, technology is with us right here in this room, and, you know, we're being affected by it and distracted by it, and I don't think anybody had any problem with using it as a negative aspect, because,
it kind of comes across as a negative thing, but, you know, to use this tired phrase, it is what it is. It was just to kind of show,
I mean, it was honest. I was texting and driving, and I crashed. I mean, that was,
In the movie. Right.
And we just exaggerated that to a point so that people could say, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are texting their people sitting right next to them when they could actually be having a conversation. This really happens in real life. So we're just making it
More dramatic.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the, when your friends have seen this, what's their reaction to the film? Do they react to that as, oh, I recognize that's something that I do, or what have they said?
My mom absolutely loved it. She's always harping on me, like, don't text and drive, don't text and drive, which I don't have a car, so I don't really know how I could text and drive anyway.
Don't text and walk. You could injure yourself.
So, I mean, she raved about it. She showed it to all of her coworkers, all of our, like, my aunts and uncles, my entire family. Like, she thought it was so, like, powerful of a message. She's a teacher. She showed it to her class so the kids would get, you know, that into their head not to text and drive. My friends, they liked the film itself, but, I mean, while they were watching it, they're texting, you know, like, I don't think it's going to.
There's no irony.
It's not going to affect
there.
Any. Even I was, you know, watching it with my friend. I was like, oh, I just got a text. 1 second. I mean, like, it's just something I almost can't avoid in this generation now. And I don't think it's going to affect any of our friends as much as, you know, we might have thought the film would.
What was interesting is in the writer's room, we never really saw this as being a PSA against don't text and drive. Because we were kind of all about the subconscious element of the
dream
story.
World. That's what we like.
And didn't realize that until, you know, the thing was finished. It's like, wow, it's a big PSA on texting and driving. Yeah.
Subconsciously, you don't actually like texting, but you're willing to accept it.
Right.
Because we're always willing to send out the text, but it's sometimes annoying to receive the text, the first in the volley, I find. Oh, why am I being texted? Oh, okay. So, well, why don't you set up some of the footage? I think you were sort of doing that with what you're just saying. Tell us about the excerpt you're going to show.
Okay. What happens is that the character, we didn't really give her a name, we played on a lot of levels. So this was her being disconnected. We didn't give the character a name, so we call her the female.
Yeah.
She has been texting and driving and has a near miss apparently in a car. Her phone gets knocked out of her hand and her phone gets shut off or doesn't work anymore or disconnected. So where we are in the clip is that she has been going throughout her day and gradually is noticing that nobody is paying any attention to her. Her phone is not working, but everybody else's is. Everybody else's computer works and nobody is having a legitimate human conversation with her.
Okay, and so we'll go to that. When you were writing Disconnected in the scene that we just saw, what happened when there were competing ideas? I'm hoping for some juicy gossip, that there was a lot of argument, some threatening, some hitting with...
Not at all. I mean, we got along really, really well. Like, I keep telling Jay Randall, like, he put together a dream team. Like, he genuinely did. I only knew maybe two of the people in the room. I'd never met them before. And I think that's the case for the most people in the room. But yet, we were very careful not to step on anybody's toes. Jay Randall would forcefully just say, nope, that's not a good idea. Like, my idea about a girl working her way up in the office, you know, he was just like, no, that's been made, you know, and we were all fine with it. We were okay because we felt, we didn't feel vulnerable in front of each other. We felt like we could pitch whatever we wanted. If you liked it, you did. If you didn't, no one's going to remember it and it's just going to move on.
Right. It was a very respectful environment.
Yeah.
So, and we look to Jay Randall as someone who's, you know, obviously has a ton of experience in this, so we kind of looked at him, and as when he said, no, that's a terrible idea, we were like,
right.
Okay, and we kind of moved on.
We kind of needed that, because if he didn't, we would probably just stay on one idea and just talk and talk and talk about it, because we didn't want to hurt each other's feelings and be like, no, I didn't really like your idea. So it was nice to have him to be like, no, I don't like it, and then we didn't have to
do it. A dream crusher.
Yeah.
I relished that whole experience, just stepping on people's ideas. Loved it.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because you wrote on the 48-hour blog that, quote, we were taunted with text messages and Facebook postings from another team throughout the weekend. We taunted back. At one point, we thought we might even win the best picture for Columbus, but we completely under-budgeted our post and edit time and didn't get our movie turned in before the deadline. There's some deep shame there I can see on your faces. And we are comfortable in knowing that we at least turned in our film earlier than the other team. We call that a victory.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly a lot of competition, a lot of
playful
competition.
Yes.
But I'm curious about, since this movie is about text messaging rather, and social media and stuff, how did that affect you during it? There's playfulness, but there's also the sense of, you know, they're taking time out to text edit. Maybe we can take time out to text edit. What are they doing? What stage are they at? How did that impact you? Did you watch, how much did you watch other people? How much did you legitimately take your time off your project?
We did not. We devoted most of our time to this. The text, it was, and actually, even though it was taunting and playful, we were actually rooting for the other team as well as they were rooting for us. But we masked it in a very jibing kind of manner. So the text would come, we were a few minutes away from the deadline, and we were realizing that we weren't going to get our movie to pop out of the DVD player in time to be turned in on time. So I'm texting the other team saying, doesn't look like we're going to make it. And they're like, yeah, we're not either. So then it was just a race to the finish line with them to see who would get their movie turned in first. So,
well, that's a great movie there. You have all the sweating, you know, the people texting back and forth. And what did you learn from this? What is your take home?
Well, I had never actually gone through the entire process of writing to filming to editing. So this was a whole new experience for me. I've been part of many films that Jay Randall has done at the Union, but it was really interesting for me to see the entire process that goes into it. And I wasn't even there for all of the editing, and I wasn't there for a lot of the sound bite creation and things like that.
She actually had her birthday that weekend.
It was my birthday. So yes, I was somewhat busy.
No ice cream?
There was cake. Not at the filming, but yes. So it was really interesting for me to see the entire process, because I'd only ever been part of, you know, maybe a little bit of the filming and possibly a little editing. So.
Okay. And I want to come back to you, but I wanted to take off something you said. You've worked on other films with Jay Randall, and I know you were the lead cinematographer for Don't Stop Believing.
I was the Steadicam operator. I was not the lead.
Oh, you were not. I thought the Steadicam operator was the.
Now that was just one specific thing. We had actually 7 cameras. We had 5 camera operators. Luke Nutter, who was the director of photography on the 48-hour film project, also was the lead director of photography for that as well. So I want to give credit to Luke for that. But
so let's come back to yours. What was your take home on this?
When we originally started, we split up into groups, writers, actors, you know, behind the scenes, everything. And I just stepped back and I was like, I only want to act, Jay Randall. I don't want to do anything else. And he was like, no, you're staying to write. And I was like, I've never written before. I've never had to write a screenplay. I took a screenplay class, screenwriting class with Phil Garrett at Ohio State. And so I wrote one for the class, but never had any intentions of it ever being done, ever being seen, or anything like that. So he asked me to stay, and I just surprised myself. Like, I had to bounce off of other people's ideas, but at the end, I was ferociously typing on my computer with this this pitch, and I was really, really excited about it. And it turned out nobody knew how to write a screenplay, and they didn't have the program on the computer, which I did. So I ended up even writing the screenplay.
So this was the dream team, but nobody knew how to do it.
Nobody.
Right. That was an intense move on your part.
It was key to the dream team.
It was so weird. Like, I didn't expect myself to be needed at all as a writer. And I ended up, they would talk while I would type, and I would just type exactly what they were saying. And then it ended up turning out just like this. And I actually was needed as a writer. And I don't know, it felt... like I accomplished something new that I didn't know I could do before. Mm-hmm. So
my word for the weekend was serendipity. Things had a way of just magically being in the right place at the right time. And, you know, me insisting that she stay in the writer's room, and then she having the script writing software, which saved us a ton of time.
Else
we would have taken all the handwritten lists, and then somebody would have had to type up a script, which would have eaten a lot of time. Mm-hmm. It was just miraculous that she was there. When we wrote the car crash scene, you know, at the time, like I said earlier, we had no idea what we were going to get. We ended up getting the town of Bad River, Enon, Ohio's entire fire department and police department to come and help us set up.
I wondered where that was from. That was now. Where? How far from Columbus?
It's about an hour away from.
It's about an hour west of Columbus, right before you get to Dayton.
You had to go an hour west to find a fire department, or at least did the fire department willing.
A friend of mine and one of the other writers. His roommate actually is a fireman EMT in Enon, Ohio. So we called him up and said, hey, you guys want to be in the film? Mm-hmm. They were pretty excited about it.
I'm very relieved that's how you got the car crash, because I was hoping you weren't going to say serendipitously somebody had a car crash.
Excuse me, can we borrow your car for a second?
Just So are you going to do it again?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. It was the time of my life. I mean, I met new people, and I was up for 40 hours straight, and I didn't eat for, I don't know, 13 hours of it.
How cruel. You didn't have any food.
But it was the most exciting experience I've ever had. Like, at 2 a.m., we were getting ready to start filming, and I went home to shower and get ready at 2 a.m., and I loved it. And it was so exciting. There was no fights. There was no arguments. We all got along. We had a great time. I would definitely do it again.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you do differently from a writing standpoint? You said there were some logistic problems. You ended up not having it kick out of the DVD player in time.
Yeah.
Was that related to the writing or just other aspects? You said that there were some problems with post.
Yeah, there were problems with post, and I think that's what levels the playing field for all the teams in the 48-hour film project. And it doesn't matter how much time you spend on writing and shooting. At the end, everybody is editing and trying to get their DVDs out. So I thought our plan for the writing was flawless. That
yes.
We had created the environment. We said we were going to have a read through at midnight. We had a read through at midnight. Mm-hmm. Everybody had a script in their hand, and we were able to accomplish that. The only thing I was hoping that we would get done about an hour or 45 minutes early, so we could spend some time doing some backstory or subtext, you know, writing, so that people would have this kind of information in their hands as well. But we didn't really need it.
Yeah.
We had pretty good professional actors here.
Okay. So. And so this is available on YouTube. If you go in under Cinemache.
Or you just type in 48-hour film project Columbus, disconnected, you should be able to find it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Abby, Brittany, Jay Randall, I thank you very much coming on to Writer's Talk. And from the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Doug Dangler saying, keep writing.